General Motors on safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on safari.
I've had two letters recently from people who knew the Bandelierkop in the old days. One was for many years a prospector in the district. Both listened to the other stories about the Bandelierkop and have asked me if there are any more that I can tell you. There is one that readily comes to mind, and it concerns a mining engineer and consultant for companies in Rhodesia and Bechuanaland called Jim Rutherford, a man called Spike, and two Englishmen, Shorty Wakeford and Lionel Garrett. This is an odd tale of greed and superstition, and a degree of poetic justice. A story I've called Spike's Reef. Rutherford, because of the nature of his work, was always on the road throughout the Northern Transvaal and the Rhodesian territories. Whenever he travelled towards the Limpopo River, the giant baobab trees which grow so abundantly in that part of the Transvaal always reminded him of a man he knew once called Spike. If Spike possessed a surname, nobody knew it. So, Spike he must remain for the purposes of this story. The two men met for the last time in Petersburg. Spike was prospecting for gold at that time. Inevitably, Rutherford and Spike went for a drink together. And it was over a whiskey and soda that the prospector told the other man of his latest venture.
Still struggling, but I hope to be able to pull this deal off and buy that place in Natal on the north coast, the one I used to dream about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be a gentleman and I'll settle down then and it'll be for keeps.
What is it this time then, Spike? Cheers.
Cheers.
Gold, diamonds, or another barrel outcrop like the one that floated that company of yours on?
No, gold, Jim. Big, solid reef of gold. I need extra capital quickly or someone might pinch the lot from me. That's why I'm in this dorp. There are two men arriving tomorrow, and they're practically guaranteed to finance me. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for 500 you can come in on the ground floor, Jim. That's if you're interested.
Cash is all tied up at the moment, but thanks for the offer. Very much appreciated.
Oh, that's too bad. Jim, do you remember a chap called Mel?
Mel?
I introduced you to him at the Tivoli, just before the Bedell Syndicate went bang. He worked with me on the City Deep. We met in Southwest during the war.
Scar across his right cheek. Yeah, permanent Kalahari thirst.
That was him. Mel. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he's dead now. A motor car accident. He told me about this reef, Bandelierkop. He said I was his only friend, so he passed on everything he knew about the reef before he passed on, so to speak. I like Mel, you know. I'm sorry he died. A messy business it was, too. Yeah, 3 days he took dying.
No, I mean...
He carried his black book always. Pocketbook. Black, you know. Inside his coat. Map and all the instructions. Whether he would have taken me in on it if he hadn't been killed, another story.
Still?
Well, one man's misfortune. You know.
Yes.
Now, all that was 2 years ago. I've advertised for partners with 1,000 each. Until the two I've already told you about. Only chances replied. Several of them. One didn't even have any money at all. There was another.
What about the two you've accepted?
You know, I'm coming to them. I've come ahead. I've got the gear and the wagon. I only hope they haven't changed their minds, Jim. You know, we're due to leave tomorrow. Both of them are Englishmen. Look, I've outspanned in the market square. Come and see my outfit.
Yeah, sounds fine.
Well, I wish you'd come with us, Jim. Man, with your experience, mining and that, you'd be worth your weight in gold.
The Englishmen turned up the following day, and they all met together at the wagon. Shorty Wakeford, and Lionel Horace Garrett. Garrett looked all right to Rutherford. He was tall, with a permanently sad expression. Wakeford, Shorty, could have been anything. He hadn't enjoyed the sort of privileged upbringing that had been Garrett's, but he, too, appeared tough and reliable. They were both enthusiastic about the venture, and Jim Rutherford reckoned Spike had chosen his partners well.
Why not join us, Mr. Rutherford? Spike says you know the country well. You're an engineer. Well, that's what we need.
I'll come. Really, I'll pay my way, and I take no share of anything you might discover. I'm only a passenger,
see? Why? You're a mining man. You can help us. Why don't I take your chance and share what we get, huh?
Yeah, those are my sentiments, too.
Now, you three have formed a syndicate. Just leave it at that. I'll take shares in the company when it's floated. But now, a trip in the bushveld is what I need. Now, I'm familiar with all the laws applicable to mining in the Transvaal and most of the officials in Pretoria as well. So, I'm a passenger only. Gentlemen, we're very close to a place where they sell at reasonable prices a certain liquid often used to toast new ventures. Wish success on new ventures. Let's go there, shall we? We head for the Blue Hills tomorrow at daybreak. For the Blue Hills and Old Nell's Reef. Or should I say, Spike's Reef.
And the four men left the dorp the next day, while most of its citizens were still dreaming. They used a span of donkeys to carry their gear. They were hard workers, these donkeys, and the wagon made good time. Four black men accompanied the party. Their wages were good, and this was an indication that the syndicate expected to be successful. Eight days away found the party's spirits somewhat lower than Rutherford had expected. The reason for this reversal? Shorty Wakeford was not a man to mince his words. 8 days travelling, sure, but where were they going?
I don't mind you not putting the weight on this trip. There's too much for the native blokes to do, and we're supposed to muck in, but where, mister, are we headed? You tell me that, and I'll sleep easy tonight.
Spike, we've been on the road for over a week now. 5 days, you told us, in Johannesburg. Five, Spike.
Yeah, you have that map to yourself, Spike. If you won't show us, show your friend Rutherford. He's a mining man. He knows this part of the world. Show Jim.
Look, Jim's a passenger, not a working partner. The map's my private property. There's no mention of any map in our agreement.
You told us about the map which the man Nell gave you. You said you were taking us to the Luby River. You've got our money. Good faith all round. Right, Spike. The reef was close to the Luby, you said.
And where the devil do you think I'm taking you? On a hunting trip? Listen, the map's got nothing to do with you. You've never seen it, and it's got nothing to do with this business. Nothing
you
at all.
You implied, Spike, that the map was part and parcel of the verbal agreement.
Imply.
Whether you don't want us to see this precious map or the black book, show both to Jim Rutherford. We must know where we are. How far from the Bandelier Kop, and how far from this mythical reef of yours?
You've garden path, my friend. I can guarantee now only three men will return to Johannesburg. Yeah, pass the whiskey.
Jim, what's going on?
We've been traveling away from the Luby River for the last 3 days.
Oh, that does it. Now with it. Say your piece and say it fast.
Shorty, that's enough.
The Luby lies south-southwest from here. Shorty, I don't think anything will be decided.
That map, Spike, and get it quick.
Now, these men have put money into this, Spike. You'd better explain. Why have you steered away from the Luby? Now, leave him, Shorty. Leave him now.
But don't do that again, sir.
Come on, what are you playing at? I've got a lot of life to live, a lot to enjoy, but not to waste. If this is all a story, this reef business, you'd better tell us now, right now. Tub, what's the idea of the gun?
Put that away, Spike. Look, what I've done, I've done. It's my own business, and I'm not prepared to explain to her.
Oh, dear.
Now, Shorty, leave him. Put that stupid gun away, Spike, and get to bed. You've been drinking too much. I think you better have some sort of an explanation ready for your partners by first light.
In the morning, we'll turn back to Petersburg, if that's what you want.
Oh, no. Book first, Spike. Book and map.
I've already told you, the book's mine. was given to me by Nell, and that's got nothing to do with you or any of your...
Don't be a fool, Matty.
Now, hand the book over.
Silly thing to do, Shorty. He might have shot you.
Shot? Yeah, I'm a good judge of horse flesh, women, and cowards, and this gentleman's the best example of the last name I've ever seen. Mister, I want Nell's pocketbook.
Take it.
And Spike left the fire and went to his tent without speaking further. The three remaining gathered round the light from the flames and examined the book.
We're right off the track, according to this.
What's this game? Doesn't make any sense. Nothing makes sense.
We'll make for the Luby tomorrow morning. 2 days and we'll be back on the right road. Now, once we reach the river, there are landmarks Nell has indicated. He's marked this, you see, this granite copy. From there, we look for the gorge he's mentioned. Here. Now, once we find the ravine, we should locate the reef without difficulty.
What's this? Here at the back. Some notes. No wrote when he was going to hospital.
Yes?
This clearly states that should Nell die, the book and the map and everything else is to be sent to a brother. J.J.P. Nell of Belfast.
Mm. He wrote all that in hospital?
Well, there's some pages torn out from here also.
So the book never did belong to Spike.
You mean he stole it while there was dying in hospital?
It looks like it.
Puts the whole business in a new light, doesn't it? Friend Spike intended taking the lot. He cheated the dead man. He'd have cheated us, too.
Yeah, but why lead us halfway around South Africa?
So we could use your money, declare the reef fictitious, and then come back at a later date. Well, that's my theory, anyhow.
Rat.
Do we go on?
I think so. Well, you now have a new partner, J.J.P. Nell. Look, hang on to these things. Right. When we return, I'll support your claim, if we find anything.
It's a good job we ran into you.
That goes for me, too. We share and share alike from now on.
2 days, and we'll be back where we should be.
2 days. And we'd better watch our ex-partner closely.
Two days, and they did reach the Luby River. Spike was morose, but he didn't try any new tricks. They camped that night on high ground, close by a grove of the giant baobab trees. The four natives they brought with them were strangely unhappy about the sight, and when night fell, Shorty's high spirit seemed to be, well, to have deserted him, too. He couldn't take his eyes off the monstrous growths.
They sort of look like men. Big men with lots of arms, see? And those are the arms, all waving at the sky. See them?
Yeah, there's a legend that says when God created the earth and all the trees, one of his angels, whose job it was to plant the baobab trees, dropped them all the wrong way up. The tops of the trees went into the ground, leaving their roots in the air.
Yeah, same to you too.
Oh, I can well understand how that story came about.
I know, there.
I hate baobab trees.
Yeah, best place to camp.
I'll shut up about the baobabs. It's where my friend Nell lives. He's there now. Under the trees.
See him? There he is now. See Nell?
What is the matter with you? Shut up, man.
Nell!
If that was a case against drink, there's your man. Let's get him to his tent, Lionel.
No need. He's going himself.
And after staring in silence at the baobab trees for a few moments, Spike made his unsteady way across to his tent and disappeared from sight. Rutherford was thinking of turning in and waiting for a new day's sun when he saw Spike leave his tent with a shotgun in his hands.
Lionel, look.
What's the matter with him? Where is he going down to the trees?
Oh, let's take the gun away before...
No, leave it. He's going to shoot at
something. At the tree. The big one.
Let him be.
That's not just three. He's round the bend shooting at trees.
Get that gun from him the moment he... He's turned back. He's coming back.
There was nothing under that tree. He wasn't shooting at anything. Only the tree.
Oh, I'm sick of this. I'm sick to death of it. He can have his reef, him and Nell.
Nell? Which Nell? Your brother, you mean?
Eddie Nell, I don't care. His partner, the one who... The one who died. The one he says is down there.
Shorty, old man.
Hold it.
I want a drink. A stiff one, and don't water it.
You've had enough. What's all that shooting about? What are you playing at, Spike?
No. Laughing at me.
What?
Down there. I saw him. He wants me to join him. Give us a drink.
He's had too much to drink. There's no one down there. There's no man down there. No one. Well, anybody can see there's no one down there. You didn't see anyone down there, did you? Well, did you?
Of course there isn't, Shorty.
I'm talking to him.
It's mine now. And I'll kill anyone who tries to take it from me. I'll kill a lot of you.
And with that, Spike once again left the fire and walked to his tent. The others had no desire to quit the open air for their tents that night. During the next 3 hours, they sat in a circle, feeding the flames, keeping them from dying. Shorty was unnaturally nervous. He said little. Gallet and Rutherford tried to keep up some kind of conversation for a while, but he was not successful. And soon both men became occupied with their own thoughts.
What's he up to now? What's he doing?
Who? Who, Shorty?
That crazy fool Spike.
Spike's in his tent.
But Spike wasn't in his tent. The night sky was cloudless. The moon burned with a nice, cold, illuminating heat. The baobabs stood out brighter by far than day, and the man who had brought them into the Bandelierkop was standing down amongst them.
Spike! Spike!
The cry seemed to come from the gates of purgatory. Rutherford afterwards admitted that he'd never felt fear before as he felt it then. Not one of them would have gone down to the slope to the trees, to where their erstwhile companion stood. And when they again looked, there was someone with Spike. The other figure was tall. It seemed to be clothed in khaki. Although neither Jim nor Lionel Gallet was sure of this afterwards. They distinctly saw Spike fall on his knees before this figure as if begging for mercy.
Jim,
let's get down there now. Quick! Spike! Spike!
Under the largest of the baobabs, Spike lay. There wasn't a mark of violence upon him. The face was twisted, though. Twisted as if he'd died in great fear. There was no sign of the other man they thought they'd seen with Spike.
This is just about the end of the trail for us. Petersburg now. And quick!
But they didn't return to Petersburg. They voted on it, and Rutherford and Gallet won. They buried Spike, and were out prospecting by 8 o'clock. Suddenly, everything was easy. The locality coincided with the markings on old Nil's map. They found the copy, found the natural break in the rock formation he'd marked. Shorty was given the job of crushing and panning the samples, while the other two worked the outcrop where they felt certain the reef had to be. The day passed slowly. Shorty worked well enough, but his heart wasn't in his job. On perhaps his 10th trip back from the river, he brought them the news they wanted to hear.
Jim, it's all right. This lock's positive.
Yes?
There's gold out here. Lots of it.
We've hit it all right.
Success! Do you realize what this means, Shorty? Do you, man? Do you?
Yes. Silence down there's terrible. Lionel, he's down there. Spike's down there. He's down there, Jim.
We'll see you in on this now, Jim.
Get back there.
No getting away from it.
You're all the
you're with
gold
us after
in
what's
the
happened,
whole
and...
world.
Shorty? What the devil do you mean? Spike's under 4 feet of Luby Earth, man. We buried him this morning.
Well, we'll pay your claims tomorrow. This is going to be an important discovery. Right, let's get back to camp. Bring the band, Shorty. In the morning, as soon as you've paid your claims, I think we should get back to Petersburg, ready by the magistrate.
Another bottle, Shorty. Open it. The night's still young. To success.
Success indeed. If only poor old Spike had waited.
Yeah, we'll drink to the beggar anyhow. To Spike. To Spike, Lionel.
Moochie, bring some water.
I never known the moon as bright anywhere else on the continent as it is here.
Yeah, stand. Drink. To Spike.
And reluctantly the other two rose and the strange toast was delivered. The moon was bright over the baobabs, brighter even than the night before. Garrett saw the bird first. It swooped low over the camp and rose high again across the face of the moon. He turned to comment and found himself staring into the face of Moochie, one of the boys they brought with them from Petersburg.
Boss. Boss, bad luck, see.
What is it? What?
That bird is a dead one. Armacop. We will die now. We must instant and leave this bad place now.
Bird? Habakov? Jim?
You're mistaken, Moochie. Tiguana don't fly around at night. It's only an owl.
No, but still one.
And the bird again swooped over the camp and came to rest no more than 30 yards away on a lightning-shattered tree stump.
The dead one. The devil's the messenger of death.
It is a Habakov, Jim.
It's what he said.
The bird sat upon the shattered tree.
Messenger of death. Well, he'll be a messenger not much longer.
Shorty, where the... Shorty!
But Shorty made for the tents first. He ducked in and reappeared a second or two later. In the moonlight, Garrett and Rutherford saw that he was clutching the late lamented Spike's shotgun.
Shorty! What the blazes you mean?
Won't it be long, man? He'll die now, bird!
That's all that happened, except that the bird rose like a beautiful, moonlighted ghost, dipped once over the trees and disappeared.
Rotten shooting, Shorty. Now come and sit down, have a drink.
Lionel? I'm not a bad shot, am I, Lionel? I'm a good shot, not a bad shot. Why didn't I kill that bird, Lionel? Why?
Well, how the blazes should I know? You missed, that's all. Now come and sit down.
But at that moment, the Hammerkopf... And Hammerkopf, it certainly was, flew in from the shadows of the ravine. It circled once, lazily, and alighted on Shorty's tent. By now, both Jim and Lionel wanted the bird dead. They hoped Shorty wouldn't see it, though.
Shorty?
All right, Shorty, forget it. You missed, that's all.
Leave the gun. You don't have to put it back.
And then the other man saw the bird. He turned and then stood stock still. He trembled violently and then threw the gun to his shoulder.
Oh, for heaven's sake, man.
The shots blasted holes through the tent, tore the top of the tent right away, but Shorty was elated.
That's enough. Get to bed, we leave at dawn.
Get him into bed, Jim. He's blasted off the tent away.
Shot him through and through. That's the end of him. That's the end of Spike. That's the end of Spike the crook. Let's bury him now, Jim. Where'd he fall? You see where he fell, Jim? You, Lionel? Where'd he fall, eh?
That's enough.
Bang, bang. Riddled with bullets. Poor old Spike. Dead. Well, he deserved to die. He deserved it.
That's enough.
And the Hammerkopf rose once more, circled the camp, and flew like an arrow to the ravine.
Let me bury Spike.
Rutherford and Garrett got the half-demented man into bed. They took the shotgun away from him and held him down, pouring whiskey down his throat in an effort to make him sleep. They didn't still his laughter, not for an hour or more. and it was not until the cold light of dawn put fingers into the camp above the baobab trees that Shorty fell into a disturbed sleep. The sun was a long time coming up that next morning. The grotesque branches of the trees the angels dropped into the ground, roots to the heavens at the beginning of the world, seemed to wave farewell to the wagon. Wave farewell as it lumbered away from the place on the long journey back to Petersburg. Shorty Wakeford never recovered from his experience. Nothing could still his tongue, and he kept up a ceaseless chatter about Spike and the Hammerkopf and the reef, I suppose to the end of his days. He was sent in the end to a place where they care for people like him, where they understand, where they're not afraid of men with staring eyes. Lionel Gallet returned to England soon after and was never heard of again. Rutherford kept the maps. The claims were duly registered, but the reef was never worked. All that wealth still lies out there in the bushveld. The baobabs stand there still. Not far away lies Spike.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.